The Fan on Demand.
There are bubbles. We can see it percolating. Still waiting for the volcano to erupt on this week. Expecting a lot to happen around the National Hockey League. It's HC at Noon, presented by Lexus in the Park and the Sportsnet Radio and Television Networks. Darren Millard, Nick Kiprios, and Doug McLean leading up to the draft on Friday. But there's some breaking league news to talk about. The Pittsburgh Penguins finally have their coach. And guys, let's bring in Rob Rossi from the Tribune Review. They got their man, but they had to go through a few hoops to get Mike Johnston signed. How far down the list was he initially?
At least number two, maybe number three. They got a man. Whether he's their man or not, I guess he will be. But certainly wasn't their top choice. But neither was Jim Rutherford. So the Penguins continue to have a summer of seemingly disbelievable ability to find people that want to work for them and lead Crosby and Malkin. But it's going to be the Rutherford-Johnson tandem going forward, and we'll see where that takes us.
Does the organization take a hit, PR-wise? Over this offseason?
Maybe more than PR-wise. I mean, I don't think you can consider this team, despite what they want to tell you, a Stanley Cup contender anymore. I think they're a playoff contender, but if you look at the Penguins going forward, I don't see how anybody would gain any credibility saying this is a team on the cusp of winning something. Teams that are on the cusp of winning something don't have this much upheaval and don't have this many roster flaws.
Rob, we have some idea of what it looked like from up here, but maybe from your eyes down there, give us a bit of a recap on, not to draw out the whole thing, but give us a recap here. My understanding was Jimmy Rutherford thought he had Peters done. That didn't work out. Maybe you can just fill us in from your eyes where it went from there.
Look, I mean, I think they liked Peters. Whether they thought they had him or not, I can't say. I was told that wasn't the case, but I know that they thought they really liked Peters. Internally, there was a lot of talk about Peters on Wednesday night of last week. Thursday of last week, so a day later, Peters takes the job in Carolina, to the surprise, I think, of a lot of people around the league, certainly to the surprise of a lot of people in Pittsburgh. They move quickly to bring Willie Desjardins to Pittsburgh to talk to him. Jim Rutherford says he settled on one candidate. Desjardins is in Pittsburgh Thursday night, leaves Friday morning without a deal. As we all know, he takes the job in Vancouver. And then the Penguins sort of start the search over and move to Mike Johnston, who wasn't even one of the eight to originally interview, according to Jim Rutherford. So,
Was Willie? Was Willie one of the eight original?
Willie was one of the eight. Willie was the last to interview. And he had originally interviewed by phone, and then they brought him in. It certainly looked like it was a quick rush with Willie Desjardins. Not to be fair, they started their coaching search last Monday officially, and he, by a day later, he was wrapping up his AHL duties with Dallas. So, there wasn't a whole lot of time to talk to him. But I know this, when they talked to him Wednesday, it's not like he went to Pittsburgh right away to talk to them. So, however they will say this went and how it actually went down, we may never know. But it certainly seems like it's possible Johnston is their third choice, which interesting is none of these guys have had NHL experience as a head coach. That's very interesting given the makeup of this team.
Rob, did a lot of the problems, whether or not the Penguins went to plan B, C, or D, stem from offering a short-term deal? Is this where Jimmy basically had to backpedal a little bit?
I believe that there were some contractual issues that were problematic for some of these coaches, whether it was their short-term deal. I understood that the Penguins were talking about a two-year deal for club option. I'm not sure that had as much to do with it as some of the hires the coach will or won't be able to make. As it's my understanding, based off my conversations with Jim and other people in the organization, that they're going to bring in somebody to be either an assistant or an associate coach, and that they may have already even considered another guy, so that there's a possibility this new coach won't be able to pick his own staff. We'll see. I mean, we're going to find that out shortly here, but I think there were some issues that any coach would would take issue with regarding this job.
So let's just go back. Like, I heard 6 weeks ago Willie Desjardins was getting the job in Vancouver. So the fact that, you know, Jimmy missed out on him, I'm not buying that. Okay, so that's number one. Number two, I know Mike Johnson is already talking to people about being his assistant coach. So I would say that Tocchet will probably be one of the assistants, and somebody else will come in as with Mike. So I know he's talked to people already. So, you know, I think that'll move along. The bigger question for me is, what is going on with this Crosby Malkin? Like, it seems to be, is there a problem there, Rob? Or is it the cap, the situation with the cap, or is it the fact that they're really thin after their top few guys? What's really the concern?
I don't understand. I'm sorry, I don't understand the problem with Crosby and Malkin. What do you mean?
Well, it seems to be a big part of this whole thing was the ability to be able to handle those guys.
Well, I mean, the Penguins have two franchise players signed to long-term deals with no trade clauses. They're both very accomplished players. They're both probably going to the Hall of Fame already. They still have a few years left in their 20s. And, you know, this room has been a room that has been joyous, and it's a room that Dan Bylsma is said to have lost, particularly because they no longer had those two stars no longer had faith that he was the guy. So I think that's where a lot of the talk is coming from. I can tell you this, the Penguins have been telling me privately for weeks they don't care if Crosby or Malkin likes the new head coach, and they wouldn't find it a problem if they didn't, because they believe that there needs to be some sort of culture change within that dressing room. So it'll be really interesting to see how those two players get along with Mike, and whether even if that's important or not.
Have they taken a step forward with this management and coaching change? Or is
I'm
it
sorry?
Status quo? Have they taken a step forward with this management and then coaching stage changes?
I don't know what constitutes a step forward in Pittsburgh. I mean, they fired Ray Shiro, who was here for 8 years, and under his tenure, they were the only team in the East never to miss the playoffs. Their ownership came out and on the record said that they needed to be a team that wasn't satisfied by being in the top quartile. Well, I mean, if you just do the math on that, the top quartile is what? Round of the playoffs.
Yeah,
so
it's a good place to
be. You now have to get to the third round just to be a success in Pittsburgh.
And
they'll get a chance to write whatever we ultimately say about them, but it's my understanding that the reason Ray Shiro and Dan Bylsma don't have jobs right now has nothing to do with nobody wanting to hire them. It's because they're going to sit back and collect a lot of money from an organization that's paying them because their job wasn't apparently good enough.
Now, when you look at the team and you say, okay, all of a sudden the Rangers look better, Philly look like they could be better, Columbus look like they could be better. I mean, when you look at this team with $15 million in cap space and they've got to get Sutter signed, it looks like Niskanen walks, Jokinen walks, or Pick walks.
Yeah.
This is a team that could very quickly become a bubble team.
I think the Penguins next year are going to struggle to make the playoffs. I think there's a lot of uncertainty. Now, maybe they struggle and they go on a run like L.A. did a couple of years ago, and that's all well. But like I said at the beginning of the segment, I don't think anybody can really look at this team right now and say this is a Stanley Cup team. They have Crosby and Malkin, but they don't have a whole lot else. Now, and the truth is Crosby and Malkin haven't played well in the playoffs together for a long, long time. This is an interesting era for the Penguins, but I think you could make an argument right now that Philadelphia is equal to them, if not better, that the Rangers are better than them. The Columbus might be equal to them. And I don't know where things stand with Washington, but it seems like there's a chance if Washington gets its act together that they could push the Penguins too. And in this new playoff format, only three teams are guaranteed to get in that division. So we'll see.
We know you have to go because of the introduction of Mike Johnson as the head coach of the Pittsburgh Penguins. We appreciate your time, Rob.
Thanks.
Rob Rossi from the Pittsburgh Tribune Review.
My question that I would have liked to have asked him is, does Ray Shiro get any blame for the fact that this team has got one of the worst salary cap situations in the league? Or
should he?
You know, when you look at it and you say, okay, they're thin, I mean, Jimmy's been there 2 weeks and hasn't done anything other than try to find a coach. And then you look and say, okay, How do you sign? You've got 14 players signed and you have $15 million in cap space. And that's a dangerous situation for this team to be in.
You have Crosby, when you have Malkin, have Neal, when you have Fleury, when you have Letang.
Right. But just think about that for a minute. You've got Letang at $7.25 million, who was a top defenseman who's had serious medical problems. You've got Fleury, who can bounce back, but really didn't have the type of playoff. You still you were looking for something from in the playoffs. Crosby, Malkin are superstars. I get that. But after two or three guys, wow. after Neal and Kunitz, that's four forwards. You're scrambling up front with Sutter's not signed.
And it looks like at least
yeah, it is.
The Fleury situation will come to a head because he's only got 1 year left mm-hmm. on a $5 million AAV. But there was talk as soon as the playoffs were over that Letang was being mentioned now as a possible guy being moved out. They're going to have to move some salary, Mac.
But how do they move Letang?
I don't know that.
Like, that's a tough one.
I don't know that.
And again, but my other question is,
they're no different than a dozen other teams that have just issues where they're scrambling to move money out.
Is this
they're
not
really
a,
no
the
different.
The only question I would have about the whole coaching thing is, how does Mike Johnson, who I happen to think is a good coach, okay, and I think it hopefully turns out to be a good hire, who wasn't on the original list of the six or eight guys, ends up getting the job?
Well, because there were unique circumstances in this situation. One of them we mentioned with Rob was that it was a two-year deal that somehow maybe got to three with a club option for Johnson. The other one is, can a guy go in there and hire assistant coaches? This had nothing to do with Mike, whether he came or not. No, but what it has to do with that it's scary. This job would have been filled by now if there was different circumstances.
But I think
I'm not buying that.
Mac's
point
is,
you really think it would? I don't think Willie Desjardins was ever going there. I'm not buying Willie was ever going
but
there.
But how does Mike Johnson come from, lack of a better term, left field, and ends up getting
the
job?
Well, they clearly didn't want to recycle.
Right.
They clearly did not have any intentions to go with Keenan, Ron Wilson, or, excuse me, Doug McClain. Mm-hmm. So this is probably forecasting that a year from now, Johnston would be one of those coveted guys that is on the outside.
There was nothing holding up Mike from interviewing like there was Willie Desjardins.
Right. That's my only question.
He just wasn't their first choice. He was their second,
but they interviewed five other guys.
Well, ahead of them. Here, the other question is, you say,
and I like Mike too.
Yeah, I like him.
It's strange.
And Mike is not a young guy. Mike's 57 years of age.
You don't know.
It's not like he's an up and coming guy.
Maybe Mac can speak of this more. But do you interview today thinking that every guy you're bringing in has a legitimate shot, or do you just bring people in because it's a bit of a smoke screen? Maybe you want to cover yourself in a public perception. Maybe you want to get some information from others.
No, Jimmy had a list of six guys on his original list, and he as a matter of fact, he said that he may only go to three if he felt comfortable with one of the three.
So why wouldn't someone be on that list get the job?
I don't know.
Opposed to,
that's my question,
Mike Johnston.
Because I really believe Peters was the guy.
I believe it. I believe that.
I believe Peters was the guy.
I'm right there. I said it. It was Peters first.
Who was on his list? There's no doubt. And Peters was on his list.
Why would a first time guy come in and sign a 2 year deal?
I don't know if he's that what he was offered. But anyway, unfortunately, I mean, Jimmy's taken a lot of heat here, and Jimmy can take heat on the coaching situation. I that's fine. But he certainly doesn't deserve heat for the way the mess this team's in vis-a-vis the cap.
This was considered a model franchise.
Totally.
What do they have left?
Totally.
Back?
And now.
And when you got Crosby and Malkin, you're still a model franchise. You know what I mean?
Hart Trophy winner.
Yeah.
They're not. A top three in cap space, are they?
No, but where they are with cap space, the problem with their cap space is they have $15 million, but they only have 14 guys signed. That's the problem. There's teams with less money, but a lot more guys signed. There's only 14 signed here.
Is this not a great opportunity for the Edmontons, the Floridas, the Calgarys, to be able to take guys who
may not be superstars, but
if Chris Letang is offered around the league, wouldn't you not jump? Because you're not going to sign him as a free agent, type of player.
But the problem is, how do you do that in Pittsburgh when you're still, like, we saw it last week. Bodog had them fourth. Yeah. Fourth in favor to win the Stanley Cup. How do you sell that to your market that we're essentially going to do a rebuild?
Wait, it's not a rebuild. It's
a cap problem.
Space.
Yeah. So Jimmy's in tough, and I'm sorry, I'm not blaming Jimmy for the cap problems. So, and there's no doubt with only the 14 guys signed, they got a major problem. They got to put, essentially they got to do is they've got to put Dupre, Dumoulin or Harrington, and a bunch of young guys in their lineup. That's what they have to do. And when you do that,
they have 10 UFAs and 2 RFAs.
Right. Sutter's one who had a great playoff, and where does he go, in the cap? He's going to eat up a chunk of the $15 million. Dupre is a RFA, so he's going to, I don't know what he's going to get. But anyway, it's a tough situation.
Neil's attractive at $5 million as a legitimate 30 or 4 goals.
But if you're going to make the playoffs, Nick, how do you move him?
I know.
And how if you're going to make the playoffs, how do you move Letang? What I'm saying? Because they're thin.
Kunitz at 3.8.
Is a good deal.
Is a good deal.
Right.
So one of the few guys that that can play with Crosby.
So, and
it's just a reality of the salary.
Yeah, it's a tough situation.
In
fairness to Ray, Ray was trying to go for it every year. And Ray had to make deals at the deadline to try to go for it.
Chicago's got some issues.
Down the road.
We've got 12 teams that have issues.
Sure.
Yep. That's just the reality of the salary cap.
Anyway, going back just to finish on Mike Johnson. Mike Johnson is a good hockey man. He's been a lifer, and I hope he does a great job. And I suspect Mike will do as good a job.
But the pressure to win right away
is tough.
Is very tough.
Yeah. And he left a good job in Portland with a great owner, and it's funny, isn't it? He gets suspended for 58 games last year. You think it would be a problem for his career. And the next thing he gets the dream job, supposedly.
First time coach, though, in the National Hockey League. Head coach.
First time head coach. Assistant for probably about 10 years.
Yeah, we talked about that with Willie Desjardins, that he didn't really fit into that first timer. Rule is Mike
Jimmy same? Definitely Jimmy's goal definitely was to have a former head coach. I have no doubt about that, and for some whatever reason I think Peters blew him away, and then that's where things got awry, because I knew he asked Detroit for permission to talk to Peters before
Mike
the
hasn't
interview.
Been in the league for a while
hasn't been in the league for what 4 years probably.
It's an interesting hire.
It was interesting to hear Rob say that the Penguins weren't too interested in what Malkin and Crosby thought about the hiring.
Well, if that's the case, there was an awful large portion.
Did you hear that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm going to tell you this. A large portion of the interview dealing with Malkin and Crosby. And I certainly didn't get that impression.
Yeah.
And I guarantee you that's not Jimmy's feeling. That might be somebody else's. But that's not Jimmy Rutherford's feeling.
Well, he's getting it from somebody. Rob's
Jimmy Rutherford
somebody, right?
Cares deeply about Malkin and Crosby because they're his guys now. So I'm not buying that unless it's somebody else in the organization saying it, but I guarantee it's not Jimmy Rutherford saying it.
He cares about them and how they perform, but does he value their opinion on who the coach is going to be?
No, he wouldn't, but there was a large part of the interview process on how would you deal with Malkin and Crosby. Yeah,
I think that's a totally different story
but,
then.
But there has to be
it's some, not the, if the, if you the, sat the, in the interview and said, I'm going to treat them like everybody else, you weren't getting the job.
But there has to be an element to where you have to have a style of play conducive to
there.
Sid.
Totally.
So
big part of it. You're right.
Huge part of it.
Huge part of
if
it.
If he's not buying what Mike's selling, then Mike and Jimmy and the rest of them are in big trouble.
But the one thing I'll say about Mike is Mike likes an up-tempo game, and I think that will suit Sid.
Which maybe Sid, that's a one thing that might have been on Sid's wish list in his exit meeting. Just get me a guy that can
can play.
If he knew in his exit meeting
that Dan was out.
Yeah, and I don't know that he knew that.
Well, okay, maybe the timing isn't the exit meeting, but at some point there had to have been some conversations.
I'm sensing that you guys perceive some kind of issue with Malkin and Crosby.
No, I don't think there's a... Look, I when I was talking to Jimmy, I compared it very much to Fedorov and Yzerman when I was in Detroit. And it's a very similar situation. You got two superstars, and you've got to handle them, and you've got to get them to the point where they're thinking Stanley Cups and playing their best hockey in the playoffs. And you look at Yzerman and you look at Fedorov, they played late in their career. As they moved into this age group that Malkin and Crosby are in, Stevie Y and Fedorov played their best hockey at playoff time.
Mm-hmm. So Pittsburgh finally has its coach. Now we can get back to all the wheeling and dealing leading up to the National Hockey League draft on Friday and Saturday. Toronto's been really quiet. Keep waiting for something to happen.
Even an assistant coach.
Not from lack of trying.
Could we get an assistant coach?
They're trying.
Rick Tocchet sounds like he's going to be in Pittsburgh.
So. That's what the word is, yeah.
Well, that was the...
And I'll tell you, I'll give you another name that I think, if he can possibly pull it off, will be there, is Travis Green from the Utica Devils.
But if you have Tocchet, do you need Travis Green?
Well, I'm just telling you what Mike would like.
Then you've got Jason Spezza.
Jason Spezza, yeah.
Follow the lineup. We go from there to Ryan Callahan.
And you're waiting for things to happen.
And there's a lot that could happen, eh? Because there's a lot of, you got the Thornton, you got the Kessler, you got Spezza, you got
a
bunch of things.
I would imagine.
You got Dave Bolin even. What are we going to hear on Dave Bolin?
We may not see a Spezza situation until teams want to know what's going to happen with Kessler. That's what they want to know.
But you know, Nick, here's the challenge with Kessler.
Would the dominoes not fall after that?
Well, here's the problem with Kessler that's making it challenging for the dominoes to fall. Everybody wants him. The teams want him. But the price point is scary. That's the challenge. You know, if you think about, you know, Pittsburgh would like to get Kessler. No doubt about it. Well, what's the price point? You can guarantee it's Sutter and it's Pouliot and it's a first. Pouliot's a tough one to move when he's one of their top. You look at Chicago. I'm hearing Saad's name is in that type of deal. I mean, those are tough deals to make. You know, and those teams have cap issues. Anaheim might be the team that has the most.
It's Hockey Central presented by Lexus on the Park with Darren Millard, Nick Kyprios, and Doug McClain. When you became a general manager and your team started playing, because there was a launch with your franchise before you actually got on the ice, how much anxiety was there about surrounding your first couple of deals? And the reason I ask this question is we have an incredible amount of turnover at the general manager level in the National Hockey League.
So the
right
pressure
now,
you're
over the last,
the pressure of Benning to get this deal, that one is his first deal.
There's enormous pressure.
Pre-living. There's so many, not just guys that have just taken jobs, but over the last 9-10 months.
The difference for me was my first deal was I acquired Mark Denis.
Take your medication.
It wasn't me. I acquired Mark Denis for a second round pick was my first trade, which is a pretty easy deal to make. You know, it's not like Jim Benning, what he's faced with Kessler and Camilleri and different scenarios like this with these young GMs. This are inexperienced GMs or first time GMs. These are tough deals for veteran GMs to make that have been in the trenches forever, let alone guys that are in it for the first time. The one luxury they have is they've got term on their deal. I mean, when Ray Shiro gets fired, guys, that makes every GM's job in the league in jeopardy for my eyes.
Well, I just wonder whether that's part of what's
it's pressure.
Holding things up a little bit.
And here's what I've said, and this is the biggest thing. I was assistant GM for a number of years with Brian Murray, and it was really easy to go into the GM's office with all these ideas of what should happen. But when you have to be the guy pull the trigger, when you have to make that call and say, I'm doing this, it's a lot different than being the guy throwing ideas around like we do. It's a big, and these are, like the scrutiny in Vancouver on this Kessler deal is through the roof. The scrutiny in Ottawa on the Spezza deal is through the roof. Those are tough deals to make.
And it's not like you have a trade deadline, a finish line to sit there and say, okay, either, I know by 3 o'clock Eastern time, I'm either in or out. This one, is prolonged here. So they'll always be, for Jim Benning moving forward, that plan A is I get rid of him. Plan B is I keep him. What's plan B look like if I keep him? What's training camp going to look like? How's it going to affect my team? How's it going to affect the market? How's it going to affect, you know, he'll be told how it affects ticket sales.
How is it
going? All of it.
How is it going to affect my first time, my new coach, who's a first time NHL head coach, Kevin Kessler, if in fact he's disgruntled?
Is there a point
on your team?
So is there a point where Spezza and Kessler's value is at its highest peak? Is it Friday night at 6 o'clock?
No.
Is it next Tuesday?
They're not because the money's not out of it's not a real serious deadline because neither contract is bad because the term is limited. So it's not like you got a guy with a 6-year term. These are limited term. They're big money, but limited term on both of them.
It's like trying to sell your house. How do you know? How would you know whether or not the price on a Friday goes up or down by Sunday, next week, or next month?
Well, you don't put your house in the market before Christmas. There's certain periods where you don't put your house in the market.
Well, I can tell you one thing. If you're Ottawa, you don't put Spezza on the market March. Because we've seen the history of that, and it's the price of poker goes down.
But here's the difference.
It doesn't go up. It goes down.
But here's the other thing. Don't think there's not pressure on the teams trying to acquire these guys to get something done, i.e. Anaheim with an ugly finish, St. Louis with an ugly finish. These teams finished ugly, and they don't like it. Their owners don't like it, so there's pressure on the teams trying to acquire them, too.
And it's just,
with the exception of Chicago.
In the Spezza situation, too, there's a whole second phase here. What do you need to re-sign them? And essentially, without an extension on his deal, you are trading for a rental player at $4 million cash, $7 million cap hit for Spezza.
And St. Louis already did that with Ryan
Miller.
What is
the number? Before you even discuss parameters of a deal, where is he going? Where do you have him slotted for how many years? That's what the teams who are potentially trading for him have to answer.
Anyway, I mean, that's
what is his number? Is he taking a pay cut, Mac, at $7 million AAV? Is he taking a pay cut?
Because
the way the market's going and where things are headed, and now we're starting to hear that Chicago, some people on the inside think that number for Taves and Kane could be $10 million a year. North of nine, safe. North of nine. Could he get to 10 or 11?
I wonder if players look at the...
Now all of a sudden, 7 doesn't look so bad for Spezza.
The Miami Heat situation, LeBron gets too much money, not enough for the bench. San Antonio wins with a deeper team. LA wins with a deeper team. Not star-stacked like Chicago or Pittsburgh, but more depth. Now, Kane and Taves have to look at that. $10 million sounds nice. Sure looks good, your bank account. But what about championships?
That's what the cap does for you, right? It pins you against yourself, right? You don't want to look too greedy. You don't want to look like you mess with the chemistry. And that's something only Kane and Taves and whoever star UFA is out there. Where is your line? How happy are you?
And look no further than Pittsburgh. It's grabbing them right now. And Chicago, look at where they'll be. It'll be if they have to give those guys $10 million each to keep them, they got major problems moving forward.
Time travel for me. Go back to when Martin St. Louis was traded to the New York Rangers. Steve Yzerman, Glenn Sather working on that deal. Did you like the trade at the time? Who won the trade on that day?
Well, obviously one team went out four straight.
On the day.
I liked it. I didn't mind it for both. I thought it was a fair trade for both teams. I really did. I didn't think there was a winner or loser. You got the St. Louis age factor, and St. Louis helps them go to the final.
Tampa Bay got the picks, too.
Yeah, there was another pick goes back to the Rangers now. Second round pick goes to the Rangers today.
And Callahan, they get him under contract.
Yeah. So you're going to, long term wise, you'd
at
have to say.
A contract that is probably comparable to what the Rangers offered. Because the Rangers, my understanding, were just a tiny bit north of six. So what did he sign for? 5'8"?
We'll chat about it next.
Why didn't he sign with them, man? Why didn't he sign with the
Tampa Bay Lightning?
That's a good question, Matt.
Lock up the veteran. Also, buy out Ryan Malone. And I don't know if you guys saw Cuba Gooding Jr. last night. Kind of stole the show. It's Hockey Central presented by Lexus on the Park at the NHL Award Show. Presented by Lexus on the Park and Sportsnet Radio and Television Networks.
Prices like no other. From a club like no other. The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca.
Lard McLean and Kiprios here at Hockey Central, presented by Lex on the Park. You guys catch any of the NHL award show last night?
A little bit.
Just going to bring... You guys have the Cuba Gooding Jr. thing ready? Can we go to that? You're looking at me like, what? Okay, we'll wait. Okay, we'll bring you Cuba Gooding.
Just George Strombo did a great job. Hey, is he a host or what?
I would like to be able to comment, but I didn't watch it.
Here's Eric Erlandson, Tampa Tribune Lightning reporter. So Callahan signs the six-year deal. Negotiations were so toxic with the Rangers at times. What made this one work out as we work towards the deadline on July 1st?
You know, that's a good question. I'm surprised he signed before he hit free agency. I thought that because he went so against the wall with the Rangers in negotiations, I thought he owed it to himself to see what was out there in unrestricted free agency. But in talking to him this morning, you know, his priorities in signing a new deal were what was best for his family, what was a chance to win, and then the money was the third thing on his list. So I guess if you kind of put it in that perspective, the fact that, you know, he was sold on the area, he really liked it during his time down here in the final 2 months of the year. His family certainly enjoyed it. And let's face it, the Lightning are an up-and-coming, and they have a good lot of young talent they've seen at the NHL level yet. And I guess when you put those factors together, I mean, he took a home team discount in a sense. He took less money than he was asking for in New York.
But do you think maybe he learned a lesson? Like, why didn't he use those priorities when he was dealing with the Rangers?
It's certainly possible.
I mean, that's where he was the captain of the team.
Well, and I guess one of the big things in the Rangers negotiations was a no-move clause, and I guess the Rangers were not willing to give him that sort of a clause in his contract, where the Lightning did give him a modified, and in my understanding, it's a full no-move clause for the first 4 years, and then a modified for the final two, so maybe that was a
Well, one. Maybe. Like most players that I know, cost of living and state tax has a lot to do with probably balancing out.
It's hard to believe when you're making $5.8 million, you're worried about the cost of living, isn't it?
You complain about yours every day.
It's mind-boggling to me that you're making $5.8 million and you're worried about the cost of living.
Do you listen to yourself
when you said that?
Do you listen to yourself when the cable guy comes to visit you, how you complain?
But seriously, Nick, you're making $5.8 million and you're worried about the cost of living. You're not serious when you say that.
I am serious. Dead serious.
Oh, my God.
And it does come into play, and you're dumb if you don't think it does.
Eric, go ahead.
That's bizarre.
You didn't quite hear what you said, Eric, because of the talk back and forth here.
I was going to say, that factors in. It certainly does. And that's something that
thanks, Eric.
Steve Bartlett, his agent, had mentioned.
Thanks.
They couldn't be serious.
How about the pressure on Yzerman to get this done? Do you believe right from the get-go, from a public perception, a season ticket perception, that they had to sign Callahan? Or did you believe that Ryan won Stevie Y over the course of his time in Tampa?
I don't think there was any pressure to get it done. I mean, at the end of the day, when that trade was made, they got two first-round draft picks out of it. So if you walk away from that deal with just the two first-round draft picks and Ryan Callahan went elsewhere, I still think they end up winning that deal in the long run. But I think the style of play that Ryan Callahan brings is something that's lacking on this roster. He plays that gritty, in-your-face, you know, win-at-all-costs sort of style, and that's a great example for some of the young players, the Andre Palat, Tyler Johnsons, and some of those young guys to kind of follow behind. And because there are so many young players in that room, there's not a lot of veteran experience. You know, you have Eric Brewer, you have Nate Thompson, you have guys like that, but you don't have a whole lot of experience in that room. So that's what Ryan Callahan will bring too. So I think a lot of those factors really came into play. That's the reason, a big reason why they wanted him to come back.
Eric, put a grade on his play from the time he went there till the end of the playoffs.
Well, he certainly would have liked a better postseason, as most of the players on that team would after getting swept by Montreal. But I think in the 20 regular season games, I thought he was a perfect fit.
Yeah.
Not only was he a lead by example sort of guy on the ice and very good on the bench, he produced 6 goals and 11 points in 20 games. And if they can get that kind of production and that kind of leadership out of him, I think it would scare anybody to sign Ryan Callahan to 6 years because of the injury history and the way he plays kind of lends itself to that sort of stuff. But you're going to have to do that in today's market. So I think in the short term, I think it's a great deal for Tampa.
Eric, no real surprise, Tampa Bay buying out Ryan Malone.
No, and regardless of the off-ice situation, when he was arrested in April, he's a guy who was diminishing in his skills. He didn't have the speed to kind of keep up anymore. They tried to put him on the top line at the beginning of the year with Marty St. Louis and Steven Stamkos because they wanted him to be a top-six sort of guy. He just didn't have the wheels to keep up anymore. He had the injury that kept him out for 6-7 weeks in November, and when he came back, he was a healthy scratch. So, it's not a surprise at all. It clears $4.5 million off the salary cap, and that opened up the opportunity to sign Callahan for a little bit more.
We hear rumblings about Tampa Bay being in the mix for a big centerman, i.e. Spezza, maybe Thornton. Any rumblings about that in your neck of the woods?
Yeah, not a whole lot. I think if you look down the middle, I mean, Steven Stamkos is number one, and Valtteri Filppula is number two. So I don't think it's a key need. I think certainly they would like to maybe upgrade their skill set a little bit in terms of maybe some scoring. But I just don't see them going after big-name center. Although there were some discussions in Ryan Kessler when he was on the market at the trade deadline.
It was bizarre in the playoffs. Filppula was awful. And Stamkos played the wing in the playoffs.
Because of coming back from the injury in the leg, they didn't want him doing all the starting and stopping.
So they're going to move. He'll play center for sure.
That's the plan. It might change. Jonathan Drouin's coming in next year, and he played center this year in Halifax, and then he played some center at the tail end of training camp last year. Maybe that's a long-term plan to maybe stick Drouin in the center and Stamkos on the wing, but I don't think that's going to happen this year.
Eric, thanks for doing this, and have fun leading up to the NHL draft.
Okay.
Thanks, Eric. Thanks.
Eric Erlandson from the Tampa Tribune, the Lightning reporter on Hockey Central, presented by Lexus on the Park.
You think Ryan Malone gets another job?
I hope so. It's a tough situation for him. Like you mentioned, diminishing skills and then this problem. I hope I like Ryan, and I hope something
happens.
It sounds
like it's going to get, I don't want to say cleared up because it makes it sound like, there won't be any repercussions from the charge. And I think there's a DUI out there and obviously maybe a possession, whatever, I don't know. But it does sound like there might be an opportunity for him to sign next year. And, Mac, I mean, at 1 year deal at 700 or 600 or 800, would you not take a chance on Ryan Malone? Setting all things being equal and everything's been taken care of, the legalities in Tampa Bay?
It's challenging when you're the general manager to sell that to your owner. That's the only problem. I mean, they're serious charges. And unfortunately, I hope he gets a chance. I hope somebody does take a chance. I'd love to see him get a chance.
I think he could. I'd certainly, if I was comfortable with everything you're talking about.
Yeah.
I think he could still play. And those are the type of guys that you sit there and come playoff time next year, you might sit there and go, that was a good gamble.
How much of an upgrade is Nikita Nikitin? Edmonton Oilers acquiring him.
Short term.
I'm blown away by it.
But is it an upgrade? I know you don't like the salary.
I don't like.
It's depth. It's not depth.
There's a couple of things. He had 13 points. Not that he's a point producer, but $4.5 million for 2 years for him.
2 goals, 13 assists.
I'm blown away by that deal. I don't understand it a little bit. I guess that's how, and we're going to find out, I guess that's how tough the defense market is. And again, it comes back to the challenges of getting a player to go to Edmonton.
What's Stroman get?
I just don't. I mean, everybody's talking about Piqué at seven. This guy just got $4.5 million.
Who's talking seven? Are you still in the?
No, but I'm saying for the top guys, you know, the Dowdies, and this guy gets $4.5 million. It doesn't make any sense to me.
PK was the backstage reporter at the NHL Awards last night and also went up and introduced his general manager and spoke glowingly as the representatives from all three teams talked about the nominees for general manager of the year.
We trained him well here.
He's talked about Bergevin, and I'm like, this is good. You can pump your tires of your GM as you're going into, well, continue these contract negotiations.
I hear some people talking about this guy in Edmonton being a guy to mentor Nurse. I mean, seriously?
Nikita.
They don't believe that.
I think it's depth. So
depth, all right. Jr. When do you have a $4.5 million depth guy?
Present sometime. You got to do what you got to do. This time, Edmonton, right?
This time of the year, it really is all about overpaying. We know that. Wow. That's what they've done. Yeah. They've overpaid a little bit to add some depth.
No, that they paid a fifth round pick for him.
Among the presenters last night at the NHL Awards in Vegas, hosted by George Strombolopoulos, Cuba Gooding Jr. He was on stage with Adam Graves and Mark Messier. Here's a little sample.
Come on, let's make a reverse Oreo. Come on, let's do it this way.
Let's do it this way.
That's right. Double stuff. Mm-hmm. Adam, don't grab my ass. Mark, tell us seriously about the Messier Leadership Award. Just say a little something. Get your hand off my
Okay, first of all, could Adam Graves be more uncomfortable in that scenario than I've ever seen, and I've known him a long time?
Okay. All he's saying is
he thought about a million places he'd rather be.
He was trying to get off the stage.
Stand right there.
He was trying to get off the stage.
And his, what was it, reverse Oreo?
Yeah. Look at the shoes. Look at my shoes. Neither one of them wanted to make eye contact with each other. Cuba went off. Are you going to stick around with Tim and Sid?
Maybe.
I just want to, you've got a good story as it relates to what's going on in the World Cup. I won't ruin it.
I got a good story.
Mm-hmm. You have something in common, and it's not just the fact that Greece has advanced to the round of 16,
which
for the first time ever.
Pretty pumped.
You guys won the Euro Cup a couple of years
2004.
Ago. 2004. And you've never been to the round of 16 in the World Cup.
Is it called the Sweet 16?
I haven't been around for all those years, but that's what I'm told, yes.
Strange.
I'm sure the Danforth. Very excited.
So everybody knows the big story in the World Cup from a controversy and individual storyline.
Did you watch it, by the way? Did you watch the last minute and then the penalty shot?
Mm.
Did you see it?
No. The Greek game? No.
Yeah. Oh, it was amazing television.
Kipper has something in common.
I'm sorry. PEI is not eligible for World Cup competition. No, I'm sorry.
We get it on TV. I just had other things to do. I had to, forget what it was.
And then we'll be back on Connected.
For 6 p.m. And will they file a report? Will the guys get down to the draft fast enough to file a report?
There's 5 hours between now and 6 o'clock, and who knows what the hell's going to happen in those 5 hours.
Exciting times.
Very exciting. Don't take this personally, but I feel like Macaulay Culkin right now, home alone.
Macaulay?
What is it, Macaulay? Macaulay Culkin?
You mean you feel you should be at the draft?
Home alone.
You should be at the draft. Is that what you
misery
feel?
Misery loves company, so I'm glad you guys are here with me.
Rick Tockett is an assistant coach to Mike Johnston.
Where'd we hear that before?
Oh. On Hockey Central at noon.
Exactly. Before the press conference we heard that, yes.
But there's
inquiring minds want to know. I'm sorry.
And congratulations to all the winners last night. Sidney Crosby, Duncan Keith.
Yes. Worthy recipients.
Worthy recipients.
That's all you can do to end the show is sigh?
It's been a busy one.
Your turn.
It's been a busy show.
It's
going to be a lot of busy ones.
Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. Kippy on Tim and Sid. Next on Sportsnet Radio, Fan 590.